And I thought, well, I wonder if I could figure that out. And so I got a team together, including a scientist, because I'm a fashion designer. I'm not trained in experimentation, in scientific experimentation, and a textile designer, along with four other students from different disciplines of sustainability, business, design, and textiles. And we put this idea together to create this new sequin material. And it's gone through many kind of innovations of development in terms of proof of concept. And finally, through several grants that I was able to obtain, it's close to a commercial prototype now, but we now have a patent on it. And we created this whole spectrum on a color card of different options and different shapes.
Welcome to another episode of Innovation Insights, where we dive deep into the mind shaping the future of industries through innovation, creativity, and groundbreaking research. We believe that innovation happens in all aspects of life. Hey, I am your host, Dr. Yolanda Sanders. Today, we are thrilled to be joined by a true trailblazer in sustainable fashion, Dr. Jessica Sharla. Dr. Sharla is an associate professor at the University of Texas at Austin. She's also a fashion designer and a consultant with over 14 years of industry experience. She has worked with prestigious fashion houses in New York City and has now dedicated herself to empowering the next generation of fashion leaders. One of her most recent and exciting projects is the creation of that sustainable, I will do that one again. One of her most recent and exciting projects is the creation of a sustainable fashion material labs at UT Austin, where she is pushing the boundaries of sustainability of fashion through the development of plant-based, eco-friendly sequins. Her ongoing work is sustainability, innovation, core structures, and mentorship, shaping the future of fashion, art, and science. In today's episode, we will also dive deep into her journey and the revolutionary Particles of Color exhibition that she curated, which is her vision for the future of sustainable design. So join us as we explore how Dr. Sharla is integrating fashion, science, and sustainability in ways that will inspire us all. Jessica, welcome to Innovation Insights. Thank you for being here.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
This is so fun. I've known you now for 6, 7, 8 years. It's been a while.
Yeah.
And I have to confess to our audience, I was a member of her dissertation committee, and I was so proud to be a part of that process. And when she was telling us about the Particles of Color exhibition, I just knew that we needed to have her on the podcast. So thank you for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me again. And I was very honored to have you on my committee. So happy to reconnect in this way.
Yes. Well, tell us about your journey, because again, you've worked in industry. You have such excellent industry experience. Can you talk a little bit about that? And just also, what got you into fashion? Was it just the love that you started with as a child or later on in life?
Yeah. So I did not have a very linear journey in terms of career. It's gone many different paths, but it's all been surrounded by creativity and storytelling. And so what got me into fashion was really looking at paper magazines, which were a thing back in the day, and just falling in love with the storytelling. I would go through magazines and rip out pictures of these editorials that were really inspiring and exciting and tape them all across my room. And so I knew that one day I wanted to move to New York and work in the fashion industry, originally in publishing, where I started at FHM magazine and YM magazine. And as I just started to get deeper and deeper into this world of fashion, I started styling and then went to Parsons and FIT to learn how to construct garments and design. And so just kept going deeper and deeper into the rabbit hole, thinking that my original idea was storytelling and looking at fashion, but became one of the creators and ideators of storytelling and in regards to creating fashion. That's how I got to New York. I started working for a small designer there and really learning about entrepreneurship as well as design. And that really was incredibly helpful because eventually I started my own brand. So always having to think about creativity and who you're marketing to, along with price margins and production, it became a really holistic experience. And then living in New York, just being inspired by what I got to see every day, the people, the places, the energy. It was so exciting as being a young 20-something-year-old living and working in fashion and being in that New York City. I was very lucky to experience it. And that's really where I got a lot of my training in terms of work ethic. It really came after college. I was not one of those students who was that diligent. It came from living in New York and working in New York and having to survive working in that industry, which was tough back in the day. Yeah.
Would you talk a little bit more about that, the work ethic? Because many individuals feel, oh, fashion, oh, it's fun. Oh, it is glamorous. Oh, it's a fashion show every day. Talk a little bit about that work ethic that you said that you developed by living in New York and working in the industry there.
Yeah, coming from California, which was a lot more laid back and relaxed, I was literally dropped off in a blizzard on the corner of 75th and 2nd, not knowing north, south, east, west, and lived in a brownstone walk-up where I could literally touch each sides of the walls with my hands. So just being thrown into a living environment, first of all, that was not comfortable, that was also a struggle, helped me understand this is not going to be easy. And if I want to survive, I need to figure out the subway system and how to get around the city as well as the different type of work ethic here. So my first job, they expected me to be caught up and they gave me about 2 days to really figure it out. And I took on the challenge. I didn't want to give up and really wanted to learn as much as I could about the fashion industry and then what was expected of me. So the work ethic, yeah, fashion is absolutely fun and creative, but that's really what the viewers see at the end. Behind the scenes, it's long hours. It's a lot of problem solving. It's a lot of days at the office. It's a labor of love, but it could be really hard physically as well as emotionally, intellectually, because you have a lot of things to manage. I would work at a studio for 12 hours physically standing and making things and sewing things and creating things. And then the next day I had to switch and be on my computer for 10 hours working on Excel sheets. Then I had to go to trade shows and actually sell the garments and the collections and be great with people. So a lot of hats to wear, a lot of long hours. When I started my company in New York, I actually had a client say, "Why are you doing this?" Because they got to see the behind the scenes process of creating things and making things and how much I was physically exhausted. And I can't stop. It's something that keeps coming back to me in one way or another. I just can't stop doing this. I just love it, even though it's absolutely exhausting. There's just something about it where I have a story to tell or a problem to solve. The creativity continuously draws me back in. Yeah, it's a lot of work. It is fun. It's glamorous. A lot of parties, but you earn those parties. You earn your attendance by the work that you're doing behind the scenes. Yes.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your business, too, that you started while you were in New York, because I mean, there's not a lot of people that start up businesses in New York.
Yeah.
That, especially someone that moves to New York and then starts up a business there.
Yes. And what worked in my favor is that I was 23, 24 years old and absolutely clueless. And so I didn't mind taking the risk and seeing what happened. I didn't have a lot of funding. So while I was starting my business, I also had to work part-time. And that's where I learned how to work in fashion PR. And that's also where I learned how to work in wholesale fashion. So I would take a lot of freelance jobs that would help me learn how to promote my own company, which was called back in there, it was Charlotte Designs, and it was a high-end evening wear company. I had been working with another designer who did a lot of evening wear and mother of the bride dresses and suiting. So it was a really nice transition because I had already learned about that market, who the buyers were, who the vendors were, how to get production done. I always tell also my students, pick a market that you're interested in because it's going to kind of determine your path and how you excel in your career. So evening wear, silk fabrications, high-end garments were really where I focused. I was scrappy. I made friends with the photographers and models, and we did test shoots to promote my marketing materials. I kind of hustled and ran around garment district. I lived in the garment district and was really great friends with the production studios that I worked with. I hired interns from Parsons and FIT and started to distribute through showrooms, both nationally and internationally, while also working the side jobs. But it was what I look at when I look back at that, I'm amazed by the little success that I had without knowing a lot. But it was a fantastic learning experience. And so I was able to learn so much, not only about design, manufacturing, and production, but sales, PR, marketing, creative direction. And so it felt like just a wonderful 8 years of experience in New York, learning so many different facets about the industry that I could take forward and I have used for future career opportunities. So yeah, it was the hardest thing I've ever done, but also one of the most beneficial and exciting, where I met some of my best friends.
And it sounds like you really built a network of individuals. I mean, you talk a little bit about how you went about that, because that's something we talk about at Innovation Insights quite a bit, is that network and help build it, sustain it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the network, I still, now working at UT as a professor, I'm still connecting my students to the vendors that I had back in New York, and they get to reap the rewards of my discount. So things like that. Yeah, I always try to reinforce to my students, it's a huge industry, but it's actually a really small pool of people. So make sure that you're always leaving a favorable impression and that you do your best no matter what job. No job is too little. Everyone knows everyone, and maybe the opportunity here, it didn't work out, but they may recommend you for something else. So a network is incredibly important. Even as an entrepreneur, when I started, I thought, I'll just do everything myself and work by myself, and I don't need anyone to help me. And that was the exact opposite of what came into practice. I needed people even more than I would have if I was working for a company. And so that became my focus, is really public relations and these authentic connections that I made with people, and I've been able to help them and they've been able to help me, and also just enjoying the experience of getting to meet creative people in all sorts of disciplines. That's had such a lasting impression on me, and I've taken that moving forward. A lot of the people that I've met 20 years ago are still really great friends of mine in New York. So, very important.
Yeah. And your students are so lucky to have you with your multiple experiences, your network. How fortunate are they? They really are.
Thanks. I don't know if they think that, but thank you.
They will thank you later. Sometimes it doesn't come right away. I know. So you spent time in Italy, mm-hmm. completing your master's degree and studying design and sustainability. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Sure. After living in New York and working for about 8 years, I decided that I wanted just some more creative training and a different scene. And so I found a master's program in Italy at Polymoda and was accepted into the program. I left New York and lived in Italy for a year and pursued this master's under the mentorship of Linda Lopa, who was the creative director or really mentor of the Antwerp Six, Dries Van Noten. So her perspective was, and just the European perspective in general, was so different from what I was getting in New York, where everything was about this kind of commercially driven fashion industry and profit and business. And when I went there, none of that was spoken about. It was all about creativity, innovation, art, very different perspectives. And so that was just really refreshing to me, someone who has been working so hard in New York for so long, just to take that break and not have to think about profit margins and sales and all of the business component that you need to know if you want to create a business and not be a hobby. But it was just really refreshing and helpful to my soul to have that moment and also meet people there, because there were students from all over the world. Again, I'm still friends with them. I've contacted them and have seen them in different countries. But to make those connections and just to have a different point of view and a philosophy in terms of creativity and design, and to learn from people who spoke different languages from different countries, it's just a really nice, wonderful experience holistically outside of the design, the training that I got. Yeah.
That is smart of you to do that. Some corporations, some, you know, design corporations, they will take their teams to basically a retreat or some type of kind of respite so that they can re-energize their creativity. And so smart of you to, you know, take it on to your own to do that and study and get your master's there.
Yeah, that was, really. Thank you. That was, yeah, fantastic. Yeah. That was my first master's. Yeah. I did get a couple more. I don't like to stop learning. I love learning. So
one of our six core values at Innovation Insights is continuous learning. Yeah. So thank you for being a prime example of that. It's so appreciated. I think it's fun your other couple masters.
I did another one. I always bounce back and forth between creativity and fashion, but then also how do you communicate and how do you create a story around that? Because I think that's incredibly important to combine the two. And so I did another one at Kent State on mass communications, journalism, and PR. So how was I going to get my story out? How was I going to connect to viewers? And because technology moves so quickly, when I was working in New York, I had my own business. I worked as a designer. I worked as a stylist. I worked in PR. The technology that we were using was outdated. And so I wanted to learn, how do I speak to this new audience through different channels of technology, including social media? And I just wanted to be updated in those skills. And so I did that master's. And then I did half of a master's, because I did turn it into my PhD, at the Academy of Art of Fashion. Just, again, wanted to dive into that creativity and make sure my skills were always progressing and up to date. But then the PhD, where I studied sustainable fashion specifically for my dissertation, creating that new textile, which is still in progress. It was a prototype. Yes. Yeah. And then I just did a CLO class. Oh, no, no. Now I'm doing more technology training. I can't stop. I have to keep going.
That's good. That is good. Tell us a little bit about your new textile that you worked on with your dissertation and your doctorate degree.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was conducting a lot of my research on sustainable fashion, the literature all pointed towards materials as being the first kind of indicator of whether a product can become circular. And so as a designer, I do have control over what materials I choose. And so that's a really important first step. And that brought me back to the landfills and looking at waste and seeing how many materials are just wasted by being thrown into the landfill. And would I be able to utilize some of those waste materials to create a new textile that could be exciting for designers to use? And I pulled denim waste and actually paperboard waste, which became really prominent, especially during the COVID years. So that's things like cereal boxes and all of those boxes that we use for our food. They are even more prominent in the landfill than textiles, which I found interesting. But combined the denim waste, which is also really prominent, and paperboard, along with a new sustainable, not new, but a natural abaca material that is sustainably produced to create this non-woven material similar to Japanese washi paper. So this material is only in the prototype stage, but eventually I hope that it can replace any sort of leather or canvas and can be used in handbags and possibly outerwear. But I hope it to be just a first step in terms of the materials that we're going to explore and create in the future.
It's fabulous. It was a wonderful dissertation. So
oh, thank you.
I can't wait for that to continue to develop.
Thank you.
So you made this big transition from fast-paced fashion industry to academia in Austin. So how did that happen?
Yeah. After Italy, one funny thing to mention is in Italy, I had planned to create this bridal collection because I learned in New York evening wear, I could sell one dress, but people kept coming to me asking to coordinate their wedding gowns and along with their bridesmaids' dresses. And I thought, as a businesswoman, wow, I could make 10 dresses for this one client versus one. That's an interesting business model. And so I always had this idea of creating a bridal line and a bridesmaid collection that bridesmaids would actually want to wear. Cocktail dresses where it doesn't feel like a bridesmaid's dress. So while in Italy, I did my first sustainable project that I didn't even know was sustainable. I created a wedding gown made out of like old wedding gowns that I found at vintage shops or what we would call Goodwill here, scrapped them together and created this new piece. I wasn't really trying to be sustainable at that point, but it's interesting that's where it started. So after Italy, I wanted something different and decided to move to Austin and start the bridal collection here. And innately, the company itself just was sustainable in terms of how I was producing because I didn't have the funding to mass produce. And so I was forced into that. And in bridal industry, you actually don't have to make production. You make samples. So if a store orders a collection, they order one. And then they use that sample to sell and special order. So the business model itself was somewhat sustainable because I wasn't overproducing and I was using all silk fabrications, which will naturally biodegrade. But what really created the shift in terms of me thinking sustainably was having my second child. I had a first child and then a second child year after that. And just having a moment think about what am I really doing with my life and what am I contributing to society? And I had been so hyper-focused on buying everything organic and everything non-toxic and everything that they were going to wear had to be washed. And then I just thought about my business and the products that I was creating and putting out to the world. And I thought I should be looking at this a little bit more holistically versus just what I'm buying for my children, my babies. And what could I do to solve a problem that the industry is facing? So it became a shift more about solving a problem versus just creating things that I liked and would hope people would buy. And that was exciting to me because I was starting to get a little burnt out in the industry by just creating things and selling things and creating things and selling things and thinking about things so commercially. So that shift was a really exciting turn. And I was able to work with interns and bring them in. And that whole mentorship became really exciting to me. So my whole philosophy on fashion design and what it meant to be an entrepreneur in that industry just took this new turn. And it felt like a whole new exciting challenge that I got to face and take a whole new group of people with me on the way. So
that's great. And so then you ended up at UT Austin.
Yeah.
Teaching.
Yeah. They saw what I was doing with the students and mentoring them. And they really just loved the feedback and the interactions that the students were describing and asked if I would come work in their department as a professor, a lecturer at first. Uh-huh. And I said, that sounds like an exciting new adventure. And started that 10 years ago. Yeah.
That's great. Again, they're so lucky to have you. So lucky to have you. Now, since you've been there, you now have started as a full-time faculty member, correct?
Yes.
And you have started the Sustainable Fashion Materials Lab.
Yeah.
It just sounds fabulous.
That officially will be launched in the spring, but I have been doing this kind of as an independent study. So just on my own. I literally found a room in our, it's called Mary Gearing. I found a room. It was being used as a closet. Asked for permission if I could clean it out and just create this lab in this space. And got a group of students together who were very excited and passionate. And they started working with me first on a sustainable sequin project, which was awarded through several different grants so that we could continue our collaborations in Denmark. And then because of the success of that material, which has now been patented, I wanted to branch out and create new biomaterials. And so it'll officially be launched in the spring as part of what we're calling the Freshman Research Initiative. The goal is that the freshmen get to experience and then move up through their academic careers as mentors and fellows and see if this is something they want to explore. So it's a really exciting new opportunity that I've been piloting and now we'll implement into the program officially in the spring.
Yeah. Oh, such a wonderful example of innovation within academia. You going out, finding a room that was underutilized, developing the idea, the project, getting it approved, going through all of those processes, which is for our audience, a new space is like one of the biggest resources on any academic campus. And so be able to procure that and then to start up a new entity. It's not an easy process at all. So congratulations on that.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Wow. And you mentioned this sequin. Okay, because sequins are great. Well, tell us about your sustainable sequin.
Yeah, I had been going to Copenhagen because there are the sustainable fashion capital of the world. And in 2018, we went to the Copenhagen Fashion Summit to learn about innovation and what they were doing. Because really, the EU is way ahead of us in terms of policy and material development. So I was looking to them to be inspired and just to get educated on what was happening. And Stella McCartney was there and she said, I can't find a sustainable sequin. And it just stuck with me. And I thought, I wonder if I could figure that out. And so I got a team together, including a scientist, because I'm a fashion designer. I'm not trained in experimentation and scientific experimentation, and a textile designer, along with four other students from different disciplines of sustainability, business, design, and textiles. And we put this idea together to create this new sequin material. And it's gone through many kind of innovations of development in terms of proof of concept. And finally, through several grants that I was able to obtain, it's close to a commercial prototype now, but we now have a patent on it. And we created this whole spectrum on a color card of different options and different shapes. We've been working with designers from across the globe and locally. We have some in the EU. We have some in New York, just to see the kind of experiments and creative requests they would have. So it's been probably about 4 years of experimentation and collaboration to create these materials suitable for commercial viability. And it's been a lot of problem solving, a lot of ups and downs in terms of the product being developed, but a lot of wonderful and creative things have happened. And so I don't know if you want me to transition, but what happened was we were in this lab that I created and we were making these sequins. And I thought, no one really can see what we're doing in this closet at UP. Why don't we create an opportunity for the public to see what we're doing in the textiles and apparel department at UT? And so I met with the museum director at Texas Science and Natural History Museum and said, showed her a pair of earrings that I made with the sequins and said, okay, I have this pair of earrings and I want to create a museum exhibit. Can I do this? Can you support me in this? And I thought I was going to get an 8x10 room to create maybe 10 pieces. And I got a 1500 square foot space with nothing in it. And I had to figure out, okay, I have 3 months to create 50 objects, along with curate an entire room that has nothing in it, and the carpentry, and the storytelling, and the marketing, and the photo shoots. Let's do it. And we did it. We had 3 months and hustled and created this kind of really vibrant, colorful visual display of fashion products that were made by students and faculty and designers to really tell not only our story of materials, but their story as creatives. So it was incredibly collaborative and creative and exhausting, but also fun.
Well, and that's one thing I really want to focus on is this collaboration, because from the beginning, when you started talking about the development of the sequin, and you talked about having a collaborative interdisciplinary team to get that created, and then moving it through to the museum area where you're collaborating too. Okay, so talk about the importance of collaboration and how you build both collaborations. And this has been a theme really throughout your career, where you talked about having your own business and working. But what are your thoughts on collaboration?
I guess my thoughts are, I think you should do what you love and what you're good at. And for me, I love meeting new people, learning new things. I'm not afraid to try something and fail. And I also know I'm not the best at everything. So collaborating is going to make me better and whatever project I'm working on better. And so I'm not someone who's afraid to ask for help. I want to hear as many opinions as possible. And I want my students to take that away with them in terms of their learning. And so a lot of the coursework that I build is interdisciplinary, because I don't like to keep people separated or siloed in their own specific genre or specialization. I absolutely love and appreciate people who are good at one thing and know that one thing. And those are the people I collaborate with and bring in to my projects. So collaboration for me is who I am as a person. I want to learn how to talk to people. I want to learn different perspectives. I want to be open to be challenged and to see things from different points of view. So it's just who I am and what I love to do. So I bring that in my courses. I bring that in my teaching. Some of the classes that I build are interdisciplinary. We'll talk about the Kendra Scott class, a jewelry making course. It's all about collaboration. And the students work in teams from where the students are from completely different backgrounds. And they have to work in that team the entire semester. I think the work that we've done has always been stronger when we are challenged by different points of views from people with different backgrounds. It elevates us. Not to say that it's easy. It's not easy. It's hard. And you're going to have moments where you think you're stuck or there's this big pushback. But that's usually a pivotal moment where if you can just get past it and embrace it, that's where your work changes and you can see it a little differently. So for me, it's always hard to get that pushback or moment where you think you're stuck. But those collaborations make you better. And so part of that is just teaching also my students to sit in that uncomfortable moment and to not shut down, to actually be more transparent and allow their vulnerability to come to surface and to have those difficult discussions. Because from there, you move forward and your work just, I have to remind myself to do this too. When I'm going through it, it's not easy. But yeah, collaboration to me is so important and just a part of who we are as human beings.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. I absolutely agree. And you did such a lovely job of talking about that. That's not easy. It's hard. And being able to sit in that difficult space and but move through it. Yeah. And you've had students within these teams too. So talk about a little bit more about mentoring students through this collaborative process and then developing some of the projects that were in the exhibit too.
Yeah. So for this exhibit, I didn't want it to just be, again, me telling my story. I wanted it to be an inclusive experience. And students were a really important part of that. So not only did they get to learn about creating this new product, this new material, but I had them working with designers and creating product for the designers. So they had that real life experience of what it would be like in terms of quality, in terms of deadlines. There was no late submission. The museum was going to open and if you missed it, so it doesn't matter, right? There's no late submissions. So sometimes you just horrible thing to think, but you have to work through being sick or tired. You just have to get the job done or you miss the opportunity. So that was a really wonderful experience for me because I got to see them really care about something and prioritize it and be passionate. They were invested as much as I was. So that was exciting to me and energized me as a professor and educator to see my students just light up and want to get this done. And then we had to figure it out. We didn't know what we were doing. I am not a museum curator. The language is different. The way that you talk about fashion products, they were now objects. The way you write, the way you communicate, the way you promote, it was a very different experience. I have industry background. I had never worked in museum curation. And then who I was talking to at the museum, that had to be tweaked in terms of understanding their expectations and their needs and then the community's needs. So I had to adapt and I brought in experts that could help me understand that language and help me transform. My colleague, Gail Chauvin, has a lot of experience in museum exhibitions and she was a core contributor to this project. And then I just let the students shine. They all got to create something that they felt they were inspired personally by the sequin material. And then they got to work with, again, the designers, and they got to be part of the curation and the setup of the actual physical space. Yeah, so they were a huge part of the storytelling. They now have this fantastic experience to share in their portfolio, on their resumes, and it's continuing on. Their friends and the freshmen and the sophomore have heard about what these students have done, and now they want to be a part of it. And so it's just trickling down and spreading, and eventually they're going to have to take over. So getting them excited and motivated. I can only do so much. They're taking it and they're moving it forward. So that is so exciting and just rewarding for me to see as an educator that this is something they want to do, even without the pressure of being told they have to do it for a grade. They want to do this and they want to move it forward.
Right.
So, yeah. So they're a huge part of the process, the experience. Yeah.
Well, it says a lot too about when you're leading a project and you're bringing people in and working through it. But then at some point, yeah, you leave it and others take it on and continue to build it and evolve it.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Will there be other iterations of this exhibit in the future, Phil? Or
I don't know if it'll be exactly this exhibit. I'm always planning another project. I have three international projects in the works and I'm bringing a group of Danish fashion experts because it all started in Copenhagen. I'm going to bring them to the museum during South by Southwest and we're going to have a panel discussion about sustainable fashion. We're going to do a fashion show. So that's a big project that will continue. I imagine our labs are going to coordinate in some capacity. We talked about building new materials and possibly doing an exhibit at the Danish Art Museum. So this is just the beginning. I can't imagine me stopping. And my goal is, I always think more globally, so I don't think regionally. When we create things here, I always think about the storytelling that accompanies those materials, those projects, those processes, and how are we going to show the world what we're working on and how can we include them in our experience. So for me, I never just think of staying in the classroom, building a project and just talking to my group that I can see. Technology has allowed for us to really communicate with other people all across the globe. And so that's always my end thought in terms of, okay, now where's the story and how are we going to share what you've done and how are we going to connect with other people and how can we possibly work with them to create another story? So it just keeps going and going. And that's what makes me excited as an educator. Always changing, always challenging myself and figuring out how I can continue to grow because I'm not done learning. I'm in education because I love working with the students. I love what I do, but I want to learn more. I want to be part of this experience. I want to grow and learn new things and work with new people because I love it. I think it just infiltrates everything I do in the classroom and students can feel that too. They can see if you're excited, passionate about something. And they want to be part of that energy. But yeah, this is just the start.
Absolutely. Yeah. Positive energy.
Yeah.
Just goes such long, long ways. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. There was something that you said, and it'll come back to me, possibly, maybe. Well, I was just thinking your communication background really has dovetailed lovely with all of these projects, because you've talked about the storytelling and being able to tell that story. And that's the one thing is that you can innovate as much as you want to in a closet, as you said earlier. And no one knows about it. Yeah, you get some personal satisfaction about it, but the impact of that innovation can be so much larger if you share it with others.
Exactly. And there could be an opportunity for another discussion or collaboration. I'm always thinking about not so much just, this is the thing that we've done, but let's start a conversation. Let's have a dialogue. What are you doing? And how could we work together? And how could this be better? So it's always about the growth of what it could become next as well.
Right. Yeah. That makes so much sense because, if you innovate by yourself in a closet and you don't share. Yeah. And again, not to just share for some egotistical reason, just but to share to grow and create other opportunities for your students too. Yeah. That's just amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They appreciate it.
Well, of course. I'm sure they are. Again, I'm so lucky to have you there and all of your energy and positivity and smiles and laughter and it. You are also a founding fellow of the Kendra Scott Women's Entrepreneurial Leadership Institute Academic Committee.
For short,
tell us about that world.
You can call it the Well Institute. That's what we say. It's very long.
That makes sense.
A little easier, yeah. The tongue twister.
Tell us about the Well Institute.
Yes. The Well Institute is an organization that Kendra Scott funded at UT, and it's meant to empower women entrepreneurs across campus. And typically, entrepreneurs are, the idea of being an entrepreneur is really focused on men. And so she wanted to bring in this opportunity where women could feel supported and learn from other women entrepreneurs and just see themselves represented as successful businesswomen. I also teach in the entrepreneurship program because I just think that connecting my design students to the business of fashion is going to be important for their career. So they understand that it is a business and they have to design for a public. It's not just about what they want to create. And so I developed a course that focused on pretty much what we talked about before, all of my experiences of working in New York, where I had to think about PR and price margins and production and creative direction and storytelling. I just felt that my design students, there was a bit of a disconnect between what they were creating in the labs, where they created this mood board and they designed things that they liked, and then they created a garment. And there wasn't a lot of thought in terms of how would you mass produce this and where was your storytelling? And what if you were going to work for a brand? You can't just create what you want. You have to be embedded into the mission and value of who that brand is and the customers they serve. And so I created this course that she's supporting that walks students through the entire process of first conducting consumer research and looking at surveys and conducting focus groups to learn about what people think and what they want and what they'll spend and quantitative versus qualitative analysis. And then using that information to thread through their design and ideation and prototyping. We incorporate technology. We do 3D printing. And then again, the design itself, along with the storytelling in terms of the product launch campaign and social media and video and editorial description. So it's this full package of what you really need to be thinking of if you're going to design a product and commercialize it and sell it to a public, along with if you work for a brand, how you need to talk to different people, different audiences. Working in the design field, you have to work with the merchandisers who are going to buy your design. And then you have to work with product development who needs to get the design made. And then you always have to think about your customer. And then how are you going to market to your customer? So you have to, it's not linear. It's this experience of looking at things and understanding different audiences and knowing who you're talking to and kind of using the language that they understand versus being, again, siloed into your specialization and just speaking to designers. So the students have to work in groups for the entire semester. And they have students from Macomb's Business School, from sustainability, from government, from design. So it's really a holistic experience for them because they get to see the ideation and development of a product through several different stages. And then actually, one of the products get made by Kendra Scott. So there's this whole virtual exhibition where we create a video. Again, my storytelling. We put it out into the world and we let the community decide which design they think is the most successful. And for me, that's their project six, because then they get to validate, oh, this group is the most successful in designing for this brand. And then Kendra Scott makes it and puts it in the store and then gives back the profits to the Well Institute to funnel in for the students. So it's no other class I've ever created or have ever seen. And it works because I have this background, but also because of the partnership with Kendra Scott, because they're highly involved and they open up the world to our students. So we get an inside look of how they function.
That's excellent. That's excellent. It has some elements from when I used to teach product design or product development and senior capstone class. I used to always get pushback from sometimes colleagues, sometimes students, like, why do I have to understand my consumer? Why do I have to do surveys? Why do I have to do interviews? Why do I have to do spreadsheets with and projections? Like, yeah. Fashion is a business.
Because you're going to be asked to do that when you get hired if you want to work in strategy.
If you want to beat yourself later on, you need to be able to do that. No, it's fabulous. But then I love that you have the support from well-known female entrepreneur, which is fabulous. It's helping support this and then to actualize the designs and circle that the funds back into the support. So that's fabulous. Yeah. Thank you for sharing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But so what advice would you give young designers or fashion entrepreneurs, especially if they want to incorporate sustainability or sustainable practices into their own work or when they go into the industry?
Yeah. I'm happily surprised that I see a lot of our students embracing sustainability and even teaching me already ways of how they are being circular in terms of how they share their wardrobes, how they're recreating things out of old garments. So I love witnessing that experience of the students practicing it in their own way. I would say, of course, think about the materials and look at where your money is going and do more than just grab things at a shopping mall or whatever. Look at labels, research the company. And really put your money to brands that you think are doing good and that aligns with your values. So make sure that your economic choices are supporting brands or not supporting brands. So a brand will change its practices if you stop giving them money. But if you are saying one thing and you're shopping at a fast fashion retail shop, they're not going to change because they're still thriving. And so you can tell them, no, I will not purchase from you until you create in a more sustainable way or follow these practices. So you have so much power to change the way that a brand operates and the decisions that they make just by your purchasing habits. So that is one huge thing with your money. And I would say as a designer or just as a student in general, be curious. And be excited to try things and do the little things like showing up on time, showing up ready to work. It's not so much about creating exceptional work all the time. It's more about allowing yourself to learn something new, to try something new, to be engaged, to be optimistic, being excited in the classroom and outside of the classroom. Just first of all, show up and be excited to learn and curious to explore these new ideas. And from there, people are going to sense that energy and they're going to want to mentor you. They're going to want to include you versus if you're just doing the bare minimum or you think you have it all figured out. You think you know what you're doing. You don't really need to be there. You're just moving through the classes to get your work done. That's not really exciting for us because we want to help you and we want to have an experience with students that are open to learning and open to growing and willing to try things that maybe they haven't done before. So yeah, just be open and meet people, try things that you haven't tried before and show an optimism and passion for what you do. I think those are the best things versus any sort of technical hard skills.
Right. Oh, those are great. Those are great. You're such a great example of all of those, showing up and working hard.
Thank you.
Thank you. As we wrap up, the last question we ask every guest is, how do you define innovation? So I'll let you take that one.
Sure. I think for me, it's creative problem solving. So that could be designing something strategic or implementing a structure or creating something that's a tangible thing. But just thinking about a way to solve a problem that might be new or not necessarily apparent, or it might involve looking at something from a different point of view. So anything that's creative problem solving, I think, can create some sort of innovative theory or innovative products, and just looking at things in a different way that haven't been looked at previously.
That's a great definition. Thank you. Well, thank you for being here today. And I'd love to have you back at some time in the future, too, because I know that you're going to continue to do some really incredible work. And as you get your new lab off the ground, that'll be fun to hear about that and the projects that come out of that. And as the sequin continues to be developed, you're just going to have a lot of new materials out there, I feel, in the marketplace in the future. So it's going to be really fun from your dissertation. And to our audience, I really hope that you found inspiration here and see the interconnectivity between having a varied background, a background in communication, a background in business, a background in design. So many times in our lives, we're told to focus and to specialize in one area, but you can see from Dr. Sharla that being able to connect her varied backgrounds has really, truly impacted not only her life, but the life of those around her, students and her institution. So again, thank you for being here with us. Truly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful speaking to you.
Well, it's been fun. And to our audience, please continue to follow us. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Listen to our podcast on any of the channels or platforms that you prefer. And please share what we're doing with others. And stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to have innovators and cutting edge ideas and industries that inspire change. So I'm signing off. So with that, keep innovating, keep dreaming, and keep making a difference.